Welcome back to The Access Point, where we examine real challenges Black and Brown professionals face at work and offer expert advice on dealing with your organization, your boss, your coworkers, and your careers. I am Dr. Wendy M. Edmonds, and I am an author, management consultant, and interim chair in the Management Marketing and Public Administration Department in Higher Ed. My area of research is toxic followership. That's right. Why do people follow bad people? As a workplace toxicologist, I help you to dismantle the poison people bring to work. Now, I am not here alone. For those of you who may listen all the time, you know that I have a wonderful co-host, Dr. Lonnie Morris. Dr. Lonnie, let's roll.
Dr. Wendy, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to be here on the Access Point. I am Dr. Lonnie Morris, a management consultant and professor. I spend my time helping really, really smart people unravel crazy situations at work. My ultimate goal is to help you hate your job less. And that's why we do this work here at the Access Point. Before we get started, I want to remind everyone that you can check us out on Flipboard. Go to flipboard.com/@theaccesspoint. Get all the links to all the articles and studies and statistics that we referenced in today's episode and previous points.
You all know that we keep it real here. We have a disclaimer. The thoughts and views expressed in tonight's discussion do not reflect the views of any organization with which the hosts or guests may be affiliated.
Except for me, because today I said what I said, because this is the one right here. We are talking about meritocracy and performance reviews. There's so much, even in preparing for this, I was like, I cannot wait to have this conversation. And we have the perfect person to help guide us through this. Our guest today is Rashonda Cook. She's the founder and principal consultant of Brave Path Consulting and Coaching. She's a former HR executive and an ICF certified coach with more than 25 years of experience in org effectiveness, culture intervention, change management, employee engagement, career navigation, talent management, and leadership development. With years of external consulting firm experience and a variety of management executive roles inside Fortune 500 organizations across a variety of industries, she brings insightful, blended perspective as an executive, a coach, consultant, and a doer when implementing lasting solutions to the toughest organizational and individual challenges. I'm already excited. Her specialties include executive and leadership assessment, authentic leadership styles, leadership effectiveness, personality self-awareness, executive presence, and everything else you hate about how work goes. She can help us do that. Welcome to the Access Point, Rashonda Cook.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here, excited, and looking forward to our conversation. Just like you, it's a hot, interesting topic for me too, and has been for a couple of decades now.
There we go. So, and I want to springboard off of Dr. Wendy's comment about helping people deal with the poison at work. Because this reminds me of what's some BBD, like poison comes to mind when we think about this, right? Because over my career, and not just as an employee, but also helping other people when I've been mentoring or coaching folks, this idea of evaluating performance comes up all the time and how people deal with that. So I want to start us here. When we think about the idea of meritocracy in the workplace, I want to frame it in this definition that I saw from FinHub, posted this on LinkedIn maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. So the definition of meritocracy in the workplaces, that individuals should be rewarded and promoted based on their abilities, qualifications, and performance rather than factors like gender, race, or personal connections. So my question to you as we get started, with that as the framing, I was trying to start with you, is meritocracy sort of this oasis in the desert? Because it reads well, but I was laughing at the end of the definition, right? So help us bring this into perspective.
Is it even in the desert? That's one of my questions. Because it sounds rather mythical to me, you know, kind of like Horatio Alger and the bootstraps and so forth, right?
Yeah, yeah.
This whole notion that there's this perfect objective system with non-subjective people just looking at exactly what all of our contributions are and magically rate us accordingly and then give us all that we deserve in terms of compensation because there's unlimited budget available to all these corporations to spread the pie the way it's supposed to be.
Oh yeah, I saw that before.
Doesn't quite work that way. Doesn't quite work that way. So, you know, my question really is, does that truly exist? You know, so we're kind of looking for this perfection, this utopia. I say that it needs to be fair and we need to get as close to fair as possible. We're always talking about this country in the terms of perfect union, but you know, you're never perfect. So it's a striving towards, if you want to take that objective, optimistic view. Yeah. I say the same thing kind of exists here in terms of will you ever reach this perfect meritocracy? But there's a lot of room for improvement of how it's so opposite of that in some ways and very much relies on and includes social capital and, you know, the who you know, who you're connected to, whether you have a sponsor in the room versus a mentor, which we can, you know, talk more about that, someone who can create opportunities for you and represent you in a performance conversation versus someone who just kind of gives you advice along the way, you know, a mentor. So, you know, for me, it's looking at the system, the people involved and the process. And a lot of it's far from ideal. Let me just start there.
Okay. That's a great place to start. Dr. Wendy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's so cute. That's so cute. It's just not real. When I think about that definition, it is fluff to help you to palate what the real cost of sitting in front of someone who is going to evaluate you and you are so prepared. And none of that is really going to matter because of all the things that Rashonda said. You're not connected for one reason or another, not necessarily because you've not tried to make the connections, not because you've not tried to network, but it could be simply because you worked hard. You come to work to do your job and you really believe that that's what you're going to get rewarded for.
Yep. Yeah, you can see me smiling. Go ahead, Rashonda, you got something else?
I was going to say that I actually had a boss at one of my jobs, African-American boss, and his boss was the president of the business unit and really liked him. So he actually was a sponsor. He went a step above mentor. He had the same kind of financial background, so he connected with my boss. And he went to my boss one day and he said, see, you know, I know you think that just getting your job done is all that you need to progress here. And a lot of people in your situation think that. You just come in here, knock it out the park, and then you're going to get what you deserve. But it's just not how it works. And he literally just said that to him, flat out.
Wow.
Yeah.
That type of transparency.
It's rare.
He let the cat out the bag.
Yeah, that's really rare.
Very rare. And it, again, here's the power of a sponsor who liked him enough to say, you're going to have to start doing some networking. I'm going to introduce you to people. This is just part of the game. And you're going to have to accept that it is a game or there's consequences to not doing so.
I love that. And I'm almost speechless because I don't know that anyone in any organization where I've worked has been that brave to come forward and say that in that way. So let's follow that here, right? Mm-hmm. I saw this on, the Harvard Kennedy School did something. They have a site that the Women in Public Policy program runs, and they ran this piece last week called The Paradox of Meritocracy in Organizations. And it actually is based on a study that came out in 2010. But here's what they found, that purely merit-based evaluations can actually accentuate bias and stereotype considerations. So they had, they ran this experiment. I love experiment. They ran this experiment where they had people assume these roles of managers. So they created fake organizations, fake profiles, and said, you're going to be the fake manager. Okay. And they gave people profiles of fake employees. And when they did this and they asked people to decide who gets, who gets bonuses, they had some in the experiment that were told to use meritocracy as your basis, right? To do this fairly, everyone based on their work. And they gave other people other advice. You have discretion to do it. When they used meritocracy, what they found is that the managers gave men higher bonuses than equally qualified women with the same experience, same credentials, and even the same supervisors.
Surprise!
Right? And so when they didn't do that, and they didn't emphasize everyone has to get this fairly, that women actually received higher awards in the experiment. So my question to both of you is meritocracy counterintuitive?
No, I'm just thinking about how, I mean, it's nothing out of the ordinary that the men, based on meritocracy, whether they worked harder or not, that was how they were going to reward them. But when meritocracy was not emphasized, they saw other values that the women brought to work, right, that needed to be recognized as a means of being evaluated on. That's how I see that, that there's other things that we do that may not be included in the job description that should have been included to get them the rewards or the evaluation that they deserved.
Now, I'm going to tell you, and I want you to respond to this too, Rashonda, but I'm going to tell you why that's so important to me, Dr. Wendy. I want to give a shout out right now to all of my former work wives, all the people who looked out for me when they knew the boss was coming and I wasn't around, or somebody said my name in a meeting or dropped something or threw me under the bus. The people who said, Lonnie, everybody here doesn't have your back.
Yep.
This person already laid the groundwork for XYZ to happen. So that's the thing you're talking about, Dr. Moody. The people who are creating space for me to feel safe, protected, and to belong that isn't evaluated in this process. Shonda, go ahead.
That's risky. Risky.
It is risky. Yeah. You do have to be willing to step out, but we always seem to in this caretaker type of role. But there are men who step into that space from time to time, at least, you know, I gave you one example, rare.
Yep.
Color often.
That's right.
You know, we'll do the same.
So we
and
think.
That's good.
Go ahead.
No, I said that's good news.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we said this doesn't really exist in the desert. It might be mythical, and it's probably counterintuitive. So then my next question is, I think you'll love this. If all of that's the case, why do performance evaluations suck so much, right? Saw this in Gallup. Gallup did a study. This has been a couple of years ago, but it's important because it came back up in some things just last week.
Mm-hmm.
More harm than good, the truth about performance reviews. And here's what it showed, that only 14% of the people that they surveyed said that their reviews inspired them to do better, right? It supported them in moving forward in their path. And that in most cases, managers weren't doing their part because they weren't trained to give feedback properly throughout the year. And that they only addressed issues that were already in the past. So if we know that meritocracy is mythical, if we know that just the practice, that there's data that shows us it's counterintuitive, why are we stuck in this conundrum? Shonda.
Well, we kind of get back to some of what I said in the beginning around the system, the process, and the people. So those issues that you mentioned, you know, you're asking ultimately, why does it suck? It's because people aren't good at it, right?
Yeah. It's just, it sucks. Yeah.
Yeah. They act like it's a, you know, natural talent, right? Even to be able to manage people, period, right? Beyond just performance reviews. Do you really get trained how to manage people, how to deal with people? Some companies do it, some don't, some do it well, most don't. So when it comes to just this aspect of it, which is probably one of the more uncomfortable, thankless parts of the role, right, where you have to give feedback, where you have to worry about other people's performance besides your own, where you should be shifting your brain towards, I'm getting work done through others. So this is not a burden. This is the expectation and part of your role that you are coaching for performance. What does that mean? Performance is happening every day. It is not event driven, right? Oh yeah, I'm just going to give the coaching at mid-year and end of year. Or if you're lucky, quarterly. Some places have moved to monthly. But there's been this struggle about this continuous ongoing feedback and need for that. And then let's talk about what's constructive feedback, right? It's actionable, specific, behavioral feedback, not your general impression, not what you heard somebody say once. It's a consistent thing that you can really demonstrate to someone, this is what they're not doing, and therefore they can see readily, this is what they need to be doing. That doesn't happen. And then when you challenge, because I'm a challenging type, right? And to our managers, you're going to have to, you know, give me the specifics. Then it's your defensive. No, I'm seeking to understand your feedback. And you need to be able to be specific enough so I can actually act upon it, assuming I agree with it. That's usually not a two-way dialogue. It's kind of talking at you. And the expectation is that you just take it in and move forward with it, right? So, I mean, that's just a short version. I got a litany of things that's, that can be approved. But that's, you know, some of the reason why it's not regarded well. And that 14% doesn't shock me at all, because that's the typical experience.
Yeah. And I love what you said here, because I'm thinking back over my career. And I want to frame it this way. Mm-hmm. So I've been a director. So at the middle management level, at the executive management level, and sometimes supervised as many as 30 people, three, four units, and never in my entire career has the organization for whom I've worked put me through any type of training on supervising, feedback, and leadership. Zero times. Yeah. Zero. I'm not. And let me tell you, even when I worked in the department that was specific to understanding how people work better. Not a single time did I ever have to sit through anything and get certified and get qualified, get an assessment, a certificate, talk to somebody, get some instructions, go through some coaching, look at examples, be evaluated on how I'm doing it and get feedback on it so I could go and do it better. Not one time at all.
Which is terrible. It's terrible.
Yet you were held accountable for that, though.
Absolutely.
All the time.
And impacting the careers of others. So, you know, at least they were dealing with someone in you that had some level of self-awareness about it, right? Mm-hmm. In the space mm-hmm. and understand the importance and can intuit your way through it. But what about those who are just truly lost, don't really want to do that, but didn't want to stay an individual contributor, become a manager, and now you're supposed to be directing my performance, setting up my ratings, which impact my money, my career mm-hmm. profession, and my financial future. Just have that no training.
I know who they are because I work for all of them. All of them. They was always my boss. That was always my boss. I don't know why. I'm just here so I can get fine. Sit down. Let's go through this real quick. Let me give you your numbers and that's it, right? That was it. Yeah. Dr. Wendy, we're back to why does this suck so much? Go ahead.
Yeah. It's by design. It's really to protect the organizations, so that they can protect their money and their pockets, because suddenly whoever's evaluating them, they do really well because they're the ones that end up with the really good promotions, right? And salary increases. But I never feel as though it's an inspiring event from a career standpoint. Just think about this. Whenever it's time for performance appraisal, you walk in armored up, you know, like you have to get ready for this.
And get ready.
Yeah, I have my business case for my performance.
You can't talk to anybody. You have to tell everybody, don't call. I'm concentrating. I got to get myself. You never feel really comfortable anyway, or like this is going to be helpful. I'm going to learn from this. I'm going to be able to share all of the wonderful things I've been doing, and it's going to be accepted. I've never felt that way going into a performance appraisal and or performance evaluation. And then in the end, only to find out no matter what case you make, no matter what you say about being clear, it's always, but you got the average. What's the average? 2%. And I'm supposed to be happy about that?
Well, that's that what I call, it's hard to do meaningful differentiation with a meager budget. So that's one of the system issues.
Right. A meager budget for everybody other than
the very top.
The very top.
Yeah. And so I've had both experiences. I've had really good performance management experiences, meaning that I own performance management in one of the Fortune 100 companies. I've tried to create the training that you did not have, Lonnie, and equip people to have these conversations. And I'm an authentic person, straight shooter. One of my nicknames is Straight No Chaser, right? So I try
to
have that kind of, this is how we should have performance conversations, right? You know, there was kind of this movement at one point, to your point about it not being inspiring, around like positive psychology. So don't speak to weaknesses or challenges, just speak to strengths. I'm more of the school of thought, everyone has challenges, everyone has strengths. Let's talk about the whole picture. Then let's be smart about how we can move forward with that full picture, right? Is it a matter of you mitigating challenges or, you know, playing more to your strengths, and some of those strengths happen to address the challenges? Something over here that's not a big deal, even though it's a challenge, is not critical to your role. So maybe we don't over rotate on that and we do something else. But, you know, the bottom line is, it's about meaningful conversations, and then conversations that lead to people believing they're being fairly assessed, right? I've had that. And I've had that where I've been rewarded appropriately. Then I've had that, but the money wasn't right, right? Then I've had the other version of, you know, for lack of a better word, bunk. You know, you just come in with something like, or an example, hey, Rashonda, there's been some feedback on you in this meeting. You know, someone said it was a really depressing meeting on what we're doing with the engagement survey. I'm like, oh, depressing. Yeah.
So, already starting.
And this person also is a trained psychologist too. I said, how many people told you that? Because that call had like 70 people on it. Well, I heard, I think this person who told me heard it from one person. I said, what would you like me to do with that? And yeah. I said, like, really?
Good response.
This is the only time that you've ever heard that in the 6 months that we've been working, or a year we've been working together. You heard it from one person out of 70 people on the call. Did you talk to anybody else on the call to see if they had the same impression? Well, no. I said, then I'm sorry. I can't do anything with that. Now, everyone's not going to do that, right? There's a consequence to being straight, no chaser, right? But I'm like,
sign me up.
Yeah, I'm like, you're not about to drive me crazy. So whatever consequence of that, you're not playing that game with me, right? Well, it actually had a good impact on her, because she said, you know, you're right. I don't have any other feedback. Mm. Oh, fine. Now, I know it bothered her, but she let it go. Now, the next time she had some different feedback, she had a very specific example, you know, specific behavior. And I said, she literally said, and I know in order to give you the feedback, I have to come to you with this specificity.
There we go.
Okay. And I can take that point, then, and I'll deal with that situation and it won't happen. And then we move forward. So, and again, trained psychologist in talent, but I had to get her to see where she was failing in her performance management messaging to me, because it wasn't helpful, right? So it hit that are a problem for me, right? You bringing me a one-time situation. It should be a theme. And then you're bringing vagueness, and then from one person.
Yeah.
I just hope she was able to transfer that and use that for other people as well, not just for you.
I hope.
Because that was a learning lesson for her.
Yep. The challenge is, someone always has to be someone like us to get someone to learn that lesson. It can come at a price. It can come at a cost. And not everyone's going to do that or feel comfortable doing that, nor should they have to do that.
Yeah.
That's why the training is critical. But again, do you even believe in the meritocracy part of it is a, you know, the whole other part of the conversation.
So where is the research on meritocracy versus creating safe spaces?
That's interesting. So let's stay there because I got a question about the safe space. Mm-hmm. I saw this another Harvard study from 2021, and it's called "Can Gender and Race Bias in Performance Evaluations Be Disrupted?" So follow me on this, right? This was about whether or not you should share your self-evaluations first. So I've got a lot of funny stories about this, people who I've worked with and worked for who never knew anything I was doing until they read the self-evaluation 2 weeks before our time to talk, and they go, oh, I didn't realize that was happening. So this study is saying that there's some evidence around this because not sharing the self-ratings with managers up front, could help make it a little more equitable in evaluation. So let's find this. Because they said that when they did this study, when people did not share their self-evaluations first, that the bias relative to race in the evaluations was introduced by managers, right? So that they saw differences in race, even with people who were equally yoked in the organization by performance, by status and tenure, that they saw it differently from white and black and Asian and Latino. It also said that the race gap was stable across the years. So even when you shared the self-evaluation first and not, that managers still over time, they did this over 5 years, still made race impactful. But we're not even to the tipping point here. This was a global study that looked at an organization based in the U.S. but had offices in 20 countries. They looked just at the U.S. that the global data, the race gap was driven by U.S. Like it was us, people over here, they were making the differences in terms of evaluating people by race. That managers assigned lower ratings with employees when the self ratings were not available. So if you had not already evaluated yourself and handed that over to the manager, they already rated you lower, which is why Dr. Wendy, you said you got to come in armed up and ready to fight. And then when white women rated themselves low, managers closed the gender gap. So partly because they used previous evaluations. So if a previous evaluation was available, they looked at that, but they did not close it for women of color. And in fact, for women of color, they exacerbated the race gap when the self-rating wasn't available. But here's something really interesting. When you went, they looked at employees who were new to the organization, but they didn't have a previous evaluation history, that though in those situations, the women of color ratings were on par with their white counterparts. And in fact, they had higher ratings than the white females, I mean, their white male peers. So my question, and this goes off what you just asked, Dr. Wendy, where is the safe space for us in this?
It's not, and it even seems like there's a honeymoon period if you're new and they have nothing to evaluate. That 1 year, when you say, Rashonda, come on.
Yeah, my familiarity breeds contempt. That's what I started thinking. I'm like, that's crazy. Like, so you don't know me, so you're going to give me all this? Now that you see my great performance, is less of that? I'm like, wait a minute.
What?
Make it make sense. I can't figure that one out.
Yeah.
But
this is in no way creating a safe space.
No.
And when performance evaluation time comes up, people talk, you hear the chatter. It's anxiety. It's filled with anxiety. There's no safe space to have these discussions because year after year, people who have been there a long time, they don't even take it seriously. Now, what I will say is that higher education is a different beast. And so you can go in with your 100 pages if you want to. the truth is, it's going to be a rubric. But what happens in higher ed is it's hierarchical as well. So while people who may be evaluating you may not have the same what would I call it? When they're evaluating you, what they're looking for in you, they may not have for themselves. I'll put it that way. And that can also create a space where there's more anxiety than safety.
Yeah.
In corporate America, my experience was very different.
Mm-hmm.
I've had the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah.
And what I will say is that while the good should be what sticks with me, it's the sting from the shock and the pain of working hard and thinking I'm going to be rewarded. That was the lasting effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that makes sense that that's what you would remember. I mean, that, you know, had a lasting impact on you and lasting impression. I'll say in general with this whole notion of, you know, submitting first, I know the intent and I have different opinions on it, but the intent is, you know your performance best, even in the ideal situation where you have a manager that's paying attention, right? Because they're not with you constantly. So this is your quote unquote opportunity to lay everything out. That aspect of it, I like, right? The aspect I don't like is the rating part. Let's say that I'm a tough grader, you know, I might rate myself lower than what you might've given me. I feel like I'm anchoring myself and not really knowing what do you think, right? Because you're human too. You're going to, even in the best of situations, you're going to pay attention to what I said. Like, oh, well, I thought you were a 5, but you put you were a 3 or vice versa, whatever it is. Like, am I really getting your full honest assessment by doing this first? So again, you know, I think there's pros and cons to it. The bottom line is whatever route you take, whether someone's doing it first or they do it afterwards, the problem is all the biases that come into play, whether they're conscious or unconscious.
That's
some people is conscious, right? And it's favorites and it's subjective and it's who I like. And the ratings come out accordingly. And especially when it comes to, you know, because they were trying to do some decoupling, some companies have done this, decoupling performance management from compensation, which is a whole other ball of wax. But it's that compensation piece that'll sometimes make a manager go back and change a rating that they might have otherwise given you, but they want to give somebody else more of a merit increase or more of a bonus. So they play with your rating in order to accomplish that for them. You know, they call it calibration. That's a nice word for it, right?
Ooh, that's the
manipulation.
Word.
Right. Manipulation. Blind to money. But, you know, and I've been on the other side of this with someone, white woman. I had given her an outstanding rating. I told her at mid-year exactly what she needed to do to continue on that path. And then my boss, mind you, I own performance management at the time too. My boss came to me and said, oh, I only want one outstanding person in our group. So it's this other person. And it was someone who worked for his favorite direct report. Uh-huh. And he said, so you're going to change that? I said, nope. You know, we rolled out this process this year. Remember you signed off on this? And someone's supposed to give a written justification for a rating change. We were literally trying to combat what I just said happens, right? So we wrote a policy. The manager had to give a written justification, had to be approved by HR, but this is HR and HR, right? In order to move forward with this change. And he never responded to the email. So then I go to present to the senior HR leadership team, like all these distributions for the company in terms of performance ratings and then the HR function. And as I was walking out, he said to me, did you change that score? Huh. I said, no.
Oh, wow.
And then he said, well, I thought you liked me. I said, I do, but I like my integrity more.
There you go.
Not changing it. And then I went to my office and I hurried up and scheduled this person's performance review for 8 a.m. Monday morning, which I hated being in there that early. And not till years later did I even mention to her what happened, like long gone from the company, both of us or whatever. She's like, you know, I always wonder why you set that meeting so early because you came. But then she would be his favorite person. after I left. And he took great care of her. But again, everything for him was kind of driven by this, you know, favoritism, the relationship, the social capital. She was performing, but he was giving her above and beyond like he wanted to do for this other person and cheat someone else out of theirs. We could have more than one outstanding. He didn't just didn't want to because they also want to look like tough graders, right?
Yeah.
And was willing to play with the system. And this is another reason why at the root of all of this, no one, black, white, yellow, whatever, trusts performance management system, period. Then it gets even worse the further you are from whatever the norm is, white, male, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm glad that you started out with saying we know that bias exists in this and we hear it in what you described in the example. And I want to raise something because about, I think it was 1 month ago on October the 13th, I saw this on a blog for a company, Factorial, and it's 10 types of biases in performance reviews, right? And we hear about it, and I think I know there, and I look at this list, there are things that I've experienced, but we don't always have the language for it. So I want to go through some of them, and then I'll pose my question, right? So we know that there's leniency bias, right? So you want to give an employee an inflated rating because you feel some type of sympathy or empathy towards them. There's the halo or horn effect where you evaluate someone with the halo favorably based on the one thing they do right rather than a full picture, or the opposite of that would be the horn effect, where there's something they didn't do right, and you evaluate them off of that. There's the recency bias, where you focus on something that just happened relatively recently, and you don't look at the total picture over the year or whatever the period is. There's the central tendency, I love this one, that you give everyone on your team an average rating, regardless of how people perform. Mm-hmm. That there's the similar to me, that you find people who have similar interests and skills and backgrounds, and so you rate them all the same. Contrast effect, and I like this one too. When you evaluate an employee by comparing them to the last person that you wrote a review for, rather than, so that's what's on your mind. You go, well, Lonnie isn't as good as Wendy. I just finished talking to Wendy, so I gotta change that, right? There's the affinity, when you favor someone because you have similar shared backgrounds or interests. You might go to the same church, you might be part of the same religion, you might have the same fraternal organization. Attribution, you interpret the performance of others based on internal beliefs and opinions rather than the logic and fact. So there's something that's in you that's really guiding it. And there are some others. So my question around this is, if we know that bias is the enemy, and we've got this list of things, I'm wondering, what is it that we need to look out for as Black and Brown employees? And this is as for managers and employees. So what? Because sometimes when we do lists on the show all the time, and our producer loves when we do lists, but sometimes we know the list in itself doesn't capture all the things that we have to do. We need to give the anger translation of the list. So what are the things that are missing that we also deal with? I kind of want you to start.
Yeah, culturally, you know, right off the top of the head, like if you think about Black men, height, intimidation, deep voice, intimidation. Mm. Black women, passions translated into argumentative, conflict loving. All of these cultural things, you know, are always given some negative meaning, right? And then this comes into the realm of not a good fit, right? That's that catch-all. And then in that section of the evaluation where you could be knocking it out of the park and all these objective goals, but the how, now all of a sudden that's a problem because it doesn't fit their norm of what it should be. And they've assigned this negative value to it. So you're not fitting with their values. And so you have to look at all of these things, but then there's this extra cultural piece of how they perceive you. And then they want to make you own that. And they tell you perception is reality. My response to that is perception is someone else's reality. Unless you tell me it's a ton of people, then I know I'm the common denominator. Until then, that's your reality. You know, I don't own that. But yet it's impacting you, right? And you're only lucky if they're telling you that. It's usually not being told that directly. It just comes out right?
Right.
Right. On the fly, or someone comes and tells you, oh, they described you in the meeting as kind of, you know, a little combative, you know, not as aggressive, you know, one of the words, right? We have to pay attention to all of that. Then you have to decide what you're going to do about it, right? Because then it's that pull between your authentic self and the mold they want to fit you in. And, you know, the thing my parents always told me is, look, you know, you can do all you're supposed to do and still not get what you deserve. You better decide who you're going to be, where your lines are, what your values are, the consequences you're willing to live with, because what you don't want is to end up bitter when you've traded off pieces of yourself trying to extract the value you've earned, and then you don't get it, right? Then we have to be thinking like that all the time.
Yeah. Dr. Wendy.
You summed it up right there. Just drop the mic behind the perception is reality. Or it's someone else's reality.
It's so wild as I'm sitting and listening and reflecting on my own experiences and things that I've talked about. I remember a time that I could probably go through each of those things listed in bias and identify one or two times I've experienced that. Mm-hmm. And I remember going into an evaluation with my supervisor. Maybe this is a decade, maybe 15 years ago, and she said, she brought up something that happened easily 6 months ago and said I wasn't. So she rated me from being a team player as he was average. It was average. And it was because at one time, one meeting in the middle of a very stressful season for us. And I'll tell you how simplistic this is. There was someone who came to the meeting. This is one of those times when you are reconciling information across offices. And so we're all working in our own units to do this stuff and bring it back, and we're running reports. We all come to this meeting that we all had to do every day for 2 weeks together. And there was someone who came to the meeting from their unit, and they didn't have all the information together, but they had it on these note cards. And they were individual note cards. And what they asked was people to help alphabetize the note cards in the meeting and drop that. And my boss, of course, was chairing the meeting and asked if people would help. And when she looked at me, I said, well, are you telling me, or is this a real request? Because I would prefer not to help to do that. And she said, no, it's just a request. So I didn't. And everybody, now here's the thing, everybody else in the room was helping with the index cards. But in the moment, you know how hard I work. All the stuff we're putting in computers, the things I'm doing in my office with this office and that office, helping people. When I come here, I want to talk, get it done so I can go back and finish doing the work. I don't want to come here to sit and alphabetize cards. And so I declined to assist with that. So we got to, that's of all the things I've been helping people all year long. When we got to my performance evaluation, she said, oh, you're not really a team player.
Remember that day?
Exactly. Remember that day?
Yeah, one time.
She never said anything to me after that meeting about it. Never brought it up any other time. But 6 months later, she goes, remember that time when you wouldn't help us alphabetize those cards?
Yeah.
It was on page 36 in her notebook.
Yeah, horrible. And that's one of my rules in my training. No surprises. There's a problem. Yeah. You address it real time. Right. But she wasn't really honest anyway, because obviously it wasn't a request, like, you know, a suggestion. Thank you for it. She should have been honest about that. Right. Now I want everybody to do it. No, I want it to be your choice. And then I can come back and.
What about the times when that's not you're expected? Right. That's not safe. How about when you are asked to be innovative and to be creative, right? And you do that all along. And then you have that one person where no matter what you do to be creative, everybody gets the same rating. What people were not creative at all, did anything at all, and here you are just tearing it up. And you get the same thing that everybody got across the board. I think I saw that in there. Central Tendency.
It's on that list. What is it called? Central Tendency. That's the one. Yeah. That's the one.
Everyone's asked.
Yeah, but we want you to be creative.
Yeah.
We want you to be innovative. All the buzzwords that sound so good, that motivate you, all of those theories you learn in class that they do to you, and until it's performance review time.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of it, some of the reason the process is bad too, is just lack of clarity on goals, lack of clarity on the definitions of these things. Like, let's say innovation and creativity, right? Nobody asking everyone to be Mozart or Van Gogh or someone like that. There's all kinds of creativity and innovation, yeah. right? And some people have this certain perception. They haven't, you know, our definition, they haven't communicated it to anyone. They've got this crazy standard. They drive you crazy about it. And then they can't even tell you, you know, anything meaningful around differentiating the performance across others. They just have some third standard that they're judging everyone. There are those tough grader types. And then they're clueless. Yeah. I mean, there's a spectrum, and then, you know, everything in between. Yeah. I want to be generous. Let's just say someone doesn't even know what they're looking for.
That's right.
Or they have a definition from a competency, but they hadn't been paying attention. They hadn't been looking all along to see if you're doing these kinds of things. Again, could be compensation coming into play too. Well, okay, you know. Dr. Wendy, you know, you did some little extra stuff, but I don't have the money to really say that. So I'm going to just go and leave.
I wish I had the money.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much challenge in performance management from top to bottom, because it's really it needs to be a thoughtful process. And these companies moving fast, and they're not taking the time to do this. And then you complicate it with life biases. I'm sure we had 10 or probably 50.
Yeah, right. It's a whole bunch.
Let alone poor systems and subjective people.
Yeah, that's it. Society of Human Resource Management did a report earlier this year in the spring, and it's called The Real Performance Review Problem, right? So we've got, let's listen to some of these.
I think I saw
that. So that only 26% of companies that they've surveyed said that their review systems are effective. 95% of the managers surveyed said they are not satisfied with how their company does performance reviews. Only 44% of the managers that they surveyed believe that the evaluation system in their company drives employees meeting the organizational objectives. Only 31 of the managers of the people they surveyed believe that the evaluation system supports employee career objectives. Less than half of the managers believe that the organization is effective at evaluating performance of employees, and only 1/3 of the employees believe that their performance is evaluated fairly. My question to you, ladies, and we'll start with you, Dr. Wendy. What is the holdup? Where is our disruption? Where is the Uber that came to stop taxis? Where is the Airbnb that came to stop hotels? What is happening here? We know that these problems exist, and clearly everybody hates it, right? Why are we still stuck here?
I'm going to go back to what I said before. It protects the organization. They are not putting effort to make that change, because to make change, first of all, is going to take training for all the people that when consultants come in the organization, they say, my people need, right? And they're the ones that need to be trained. It should be very specific about that whole performance review process. And then, you know, also when I think about the performance review, creating the safe spaces, you're talking about from an organizational standpoint, a system standpoint, that's going to be costly, and they're going to build that in or not, or consider that as a reason why they don't do that, or they'll try to do it with some virtual attendant that doesn't have any level of empathy. You know how people respond to online anything.
And you know, that scares me, because we already saw here that they already hate Black women the most in this evaluation. So if you take the person out of it, and we already see that that is extremely biased and harmful. If we just do AI on this, what happens?
Well, so
the human factor, piece,
yeah.
right?
And it's go ahead, Rashawn. Interesting you say that, like if you take that out, you know, the things that I saw when I was still in the performance management space, they were trying to move to no performance ratings. To kind of get people off this whole grading mentality and more focused on just improving performance and output. And then some people wanted to get away from this whole system, like you said, like it's broken. So let's just get rid of it. Now, I don't have the answer, but I do have the concern and question like, okay, this doesn't work well, but I know this Black woman is going to be worse off if nothing is in place.
Come on.
Well, I don't know what needs to be in place. Like you said, what needs to be the next iteration, but it's not nothing because the bias will be even more rampant because you don't even have to take it through a filter like this system to prove anything. No one would ask you a question. There's no rating. You're just paying people however you want to pay them. You never gave a rating. I'm giving their feedback. What can I even hold you accountable to? There's not even a document, an evaluation. There's no way for me to prove you're rating me this way versus the others. These studies, you couldn't even have them, right? Because you wouldn't have the evaluation to look at to see the discrepancy. So while, you know, corporate is struggling with it and some of these companies are trying to get rid of it, I feel like that's the
danger.
That's a dangerous direction for those of us who suffer the consequences of these biases, whether they're conscious or unconscious, subconscious, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. But I don't know the solution, right? Other than improving what we have, but I'm sure there's some radical disruptor, like you said.
Yeah.
And the most that I've seen is the more frequent, you know, like we're doing more of these pulse surveys, like the more frequent conversation around coaching and the expectation, and then kind of tying that to a manager's leader's bonus, you know, that these things are happening. You know, but that's not as disruptive as you're talking about. And I do think we need something else.
I also think that there are external factors that are built into that. So to make the right decision, there's pressure for leaders. Mm-hmm. Just like you said, the favor. Mm-hmm. There's some risk to make the right decision that people at that level may not be willing to compromise.
For sure.
So that could be a huge issue.
Oh yeah.
Right? And so making the decisions that we would like for them to make, they're not going to take place.
Well, that's why my company's called Brave Path, because not many people are on it. And that's why I'm external, because I want to work with those who are. And we all have those moments where we're not courageous about something, right? But, you know, that can't be where you dwell, right? If you those positions, you get paid to make the tough calls, to take risks, calculate it, but take them. Yeah. But a lot of people will go the safe route, back to their own psychological safety, right? And what's driving that. And a lot of that is the culture and whether it's punitive to do anything different beyond the fact that, you know, people may not have the motivation to do it because of their bias. If they do, they still might not do it to the point you just made because they don't feel safe enough to do.
And as we wrap up, I'm reminded that Dr. Wendy and I did a book, it's been 2 years ago now, called When Leadership Fails, Individual, Group, and Organizational Lessons from the Worst Workplace Experiences. And guess what I wrote about? The dreaded performance appraisal, right? So I wrote about all these things that I've gone through, and including, and I'll tell this short story about this, going into a meeting with an evaluator, and it's the Likert scale that's 1 to 5, right? 5 is the best, 1 is the worst. And the person starting out by saying, oh, I don't give anybody 5s, right? That's how we start the meeting, I don't give anybody 5s. And I'll tell you, I can laugh about it now. I was furious in the moment, but I already knew that that was the type of person you're dealing with. I never said anything. I said, okay. Mm-hmm. And so when I went through and got all of my evaluations that were 4 or 3s rather than 5s and 4s, I left that meeting and went directly to the HR office and said, hey, my boss just told me that he doesn't use 5, so I got a different scale than everybody else. So my scale is from 1 to 4. and you can go talk to him about it later. But I just want you to know when you receive my document, it's on a different scale than the one that everybody else in the other places uses, right?
Okay. I love it.
I went immediately to HR and said, just want you to know there's something different here.
Yeah.
So it makes me think about what I've learned, not just in this conversation, but over time in dealing with this. And I want to make sure that our listeners get a chance to reflect on that. So when we're talking about meritocracy, performance evaluations, appraisals, we want employees to remember that you have to take stock of the social capital aspect of this. That while they may tell you that it's just the performance, that performance is very broad and sometimes nebulous. That means networking and building relationships and identifying people who can help you navigate some of these troubled waters is really important. Also remember that when you are confronted with this, that evaluating performance is not driven by a specific event. And that's what Rhonda told us. This is about comprehensively understanding how you're contributing, not just to the unit, but to the organization and where we can help you be more successful. I want to make sure that you understand that you have some power, while it may be risky, to train your manager on how to handle you when it comes to messaging. Right? Don't come at me with the one person said you were disparaging in the meeting. We need some evidence to support that what you're saying makes sense for us to address. And I want to make sure that you understand, as with everything in life, that there is a honeymoon period in this. The data show us that if you can get this done in the first year before you have a history of evaluation, that's the best time to do everything. So ask everything at that time and push and push and push. Because once you have an evaluation on which they can, from which they can refer, things might change. For managers, leaders, and supervisors, we want you to ask yourself, how are you using your sponsors? Are you brave enough to show people what's really needed to be successful? Are you having the courageous conversation? Are you telling them that, yes, your work is important, but these other things are necessary here? We want you to be specific and consistent when you're referencing people's behavior, that it isn't just the one-off, that you can't just railroad me because of this one thing that happened that you weren't happy with that may have had an impact in some way, positive or negative. We want to make sure that you understand when someone is questioning your evaluation of their performance, that is not necessarily being defensive. That is about creating a two-way street where communication is healthy and we get to understand each other and our expectations of how this comes together. We want you to take stock of how you're making people feel about going into the evaluation. Are they excited to talk to you about their performance? Are they preparing for war, as Dr. Wendy explained to us? How are you painting the full picture of people's contribution to your organization? It is not just about strengths. It is not just about challenges. But there's something holistic about evaluating how people show up in the space and how they relate to others and how that moves your work forward. Qualify information. Don't come at me. I'm sorry. I'm about to jump into Lonnie Mode, not Dr. Moore, not Dr. Lonnie Mode. Don't come at me with what he said and she said. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's right.
Don't just use one voice. And I love this, Chanda. I want you all, those of you who are responsible for doing this for other people, ask yourself, am I calibrating or am I manipulating? How are you using the data to support success of the people that look to you for this guidance, that look to you to perform this, even for the organization as a whole? How are you assessing people's cultural backgrounds and getting away from the idea they are not a good fit because he's too tall, he's intimidating, he's aggressive? On groups and teams, and I love when we get to talk about groups and teams, I want you to question with your peers and your coworkers, how do we promote meaningful conversations around this? We always talk about here at the Access Point that there's power in numbers. And so if you can come together, and that might not just be in your department, it might mean across departments, across units, across business units, across the hierarchy. You're talking about empowering people to have meaningful conversations about their performance. Are you creating safe spaces for your team members and your peers to talk about the things that bother them in this process, the things they appreciate in this process, the things we need to change in this process? Are you challenging the values that the organization exhibits, and sometimes particularly that the manager exhibits around this, right? Because I've experienced that there are times when, the example I just gave, when the person who is performing the evaluation has a different idea than was intended by the organization and the people who designed the process, right? So I don't give out fives, but that's not your choice. Like, that's what we said. And I want you to unpack the language collectively. When people are saying this about Lonnie, he's aggressive in meetings, what do they really mean? When they're saying Dr. Wendy is combative, what are they really saying? If they're suggesting that Rashonda's report is intimidating, what are they really trying to get at? And so use the power of community to unpack that. From an organizational perspective, consider this. Is meritocracy mythical in your organization? Is it a reality? Or is this something, is it the unicorn we're trying to get to that doesn't really exist? Rashonda told us the question, are you striving toward the perfect union? Or are you assuming perfection? I want you to walk through the bias, speak it, address it, let people know, here are the types of bias we know can show up in this process. Give people the language that empowers you to have meaningful conversations about it and also to dispel it. I need you to really, really consider what fluff you are feeding people to help them digest the reality of this idiosyncrasy. Let me say it again. What fluff are you feeding people in your organization to help them digest the reality of this? Shonda told us, remember that this is about system and the process and the people. There are multiple moving parts to help this be effective. And how is your organization using all those together? I laugh at this one when I think about it, that we know, and Dr. Wendy reminded us of this, we know that performance evaluation is poor by design to protect you. We know it's poor by design to protect you. We want you to question from an organizational standpoint, from strategic leadership, who and what are you protecting? When you're asking people to perform these evaluations, question, are you seeking meaningful differentiation but only providing meager budget? Seeking meaningful differentiation but only providing a meager budget. What we know is that you put your money where your mouth is. What systems are in place to help people communicate clearly about this? Because your idea of innovation and how to evaluate me on a 1 to 5 scale must be the same as everybody else's. It must apply in a universal way to help us make sense of this. Can you, I want all of you that run organizations, that manage talent management, I want all of you to consider if you can be the disruptor in this space, because we need a disruptor. The answer we know is not no performance evaluations. We hate that. So get that out of your mind right now. The team here says we hate it. And then lastly, I want you to think about what pressure are you exerting on your leaders in the evaluation space? What pressure do they feel about people? What pressure do they feel about money? It is your responsibility as an organization to address that. As always, there are so many things to consider with this, but we know that some of you will act like we never say anything. I want you to address this. Rashonda, if you are not paying attention to any of the advice that we offer today, what is the black or brown tax that you pay? What is the cost for not listening to us today? Rashonda, what is
that? Oh, there's a financial cost, first and foremost, and the cost to your career progression. That's the key. You don't have to implement everything. It was a laundry list. It's a lot. You can pick and choose a few and create a strategy, but that cost is to your personal progression in your career and your financial progression, and that has implications for your family and for future generations. So, the consequences can be dire to do nothing. You still may not be able to impact the outcome, but you can live with yourself if you know you tried to do everything that was in your control and in your sphere of influence. So it's also a matter of your own integrity and self-concept. That those would be the taxes to me.
I love that. Thank you. Dr. Wendy.
Right. So don't go in armed all the wrong ways. If you don't take heed to the information that was provided for you, you might go in with all the wrong weaponry, with your 100 pages, with all of your proof of your good projects, everything that you've been doing all along, and none of that matters, except that you know how to challenge the company's values, except that you know how to respond when they say certain things to you and try to snag you on one person out of 70 people made one comment. And I remembered that. I remembered that just for this moment. If you are not skilled in knowing how to handle that, it's going to make a bad impression on your future for your career, because you will remain stagnant. They will know for sure that you're the target to stay at below average to average. And the average for the company is that 2%.
Wow. And for me, I think there's a code of ethics, right? It may not be a written ethics policy around it, but from where I sit, this is about doing the right thing for the sake of doing the right thing. What we know is that people model behavior. People repeat behaviors that are modeled for them. So the cost and the price that we pay is, if we don't start to do it right, the people that come behind us will experience the same types of things. Because the bosses, when I talk about all the people that I've worked for and how terrible they were at this, they were only terrible because the bosses they worked for were terrible at it. And the bosses that they worked for before them were terrible at it. So people are only modeling behavior that was set forth. So if you don't take some of this and begin to implement it in your own life, cycle tends to repeat. It is always a pleasure to have these incredible conversations. I want to thank you for joining us at the Access Point. We discussed so much, and let's keep this conversation going. You can listen to the Access Point wherever you get your podcast. Remember to like, share, comment, and subscribe. If there was something that we shared that resonated with you, have a lingering question, as an aha moment, or you have thoughts for future discussion, use the hashtag #TAPReflections across all your various social media channels to let us know. Shonda, thank you so much for being here. We're glad that you are doing brave work in this crazy, crazy place. Dr. Wendy, is always my pleasure to be your second. Thank you for being my work wife here. And it's always good to have us here. Have a good night, everyone. Keep pushing.
Night.
Good night.